It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut 4. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I'm joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
I'm here.
And all the way from Austin, Texas, not on our high-tech satellite
in the
uplink.
Flesh this time.
He is in the studio. Welcome, Chris Landers.
Hello. It's great to be back here.
Landers.
Yes.
Christofferson.
Well,
Marcellus.
Let's nip this in the bud. Shockingly, my middle name is not Marcellus.
We
made up middle names for each other last week. So
I mean, all except Marcellus. It could certainly be worse.
Gemma is now what? Gemmeline, Lorenzo, something.
Yeah, I think it was all super Italian men's names.
Yeah.
Yours is all states. Dakota, Carolina, Florida, New Jersey, Gardner.
Don't knock New Jersey. New Jersey is great.
We have two.
That's
New Jerseyans,
why you're named after
two
it.
New Jerseyans
a
on the
native
pod.
And an adopted New Jersey.
Yeah. Although you're in limbo right now.
What does that mean?
We're still making limbo. Up our mind. The New Jersey Commission. We're still deciding.
I didn't realize you had meetings to decide.
You only know if you already know.
Billy Joel is there. I don't know. He's probably from Long Island.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You need to go.
There's a very conspicuous pop star from New Jersey that you could have named.
I know. I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be basic about it though.
It's a baseball podcast.
I know. I didn't want to be basic about it though.
We have a lot to get to today. A little bit later, we'll talk to Jamal Collier, the MLB.com beat reporter for the Washington Nationals. Wonder what that conversation could be about. I'm not sure.
Hair care tips.
Before we get probably hair care tips. Before we get deep into the Cut Forecast, though, we had two really good summaries of last week's podcast that I would like to talk about and read to you.
Mm-hmm,
so I'm right. going to do that now. The first one is from Tyler Molina at Tyler Juan Carlos on Twitter. He says, A-Rod's high-fiving failure all started in 2004 when he tried to quote-unquote high-five Bronson Arroyo. As a Red Sox fan, this tweet just comes right to my heart. Chris, what do you think about it?
I think this tweet is violence against me.
Wow. Chris, the Yankees fan, so he unfortunately was on the receiving end of this hilarious, hilarious moment in baseball history. The second tweet is from Amanda Berman, at Amanda L. Berman. She says, I hope I can give good high fives after I win games at Hunter Pence's Cafe on the menu, a latte called The Judgment.
That's pretty good.
That's so much better than the tweets we came up with last week.
Yes.
Especially mine.
Yes.
And I think an accurate condensing of our podcast.
I mean, what is The Judgment? What would that be? Like a 24-ounce giant latte?
You just have Aaron Judge's face in the home.
And that's the art.
You.
I like that. Yeah. It has to be, you know, the biggest possible latte.
That's terrifying.
Like Aaron Judge.
Which part, the size or the face?
Both. you know, a large lot. I don't like when Starbucks has the thing where it's like 75 ounces of coffee or whatever, and I find that weird. I find this weirder. So congratulations to the two of you on creating.
And Amanda. Thanks,
and Amanda.
Amanda.
Yeah, on
really,
creating the
Amanda.
Most unsettling beverage of all time. Okay, we need to talk about it. This happened this week. I think this is a moment that Cut 4 was designed to break down on this podcast. I'm referring, of course, to the fight between Bryce Harper and Hunter Strickland. Let's go. I'm going to break down the facts of the case, and then we'll have our reactions to it. So in the eighth inning of Monday's Nationals-Giants game, Hunter Strickland hit Bryce Harper in the right hip with a 98-mile-an-hour pitch. Washington was ahead 2-0. This was the first matchup between Bryce and Hunter Strickland since 2014 in the National League Division Series, when Harper had a very big game, including a pair of home runs, one of which he stared at. So we're going to include that information as well. Here's the quote from Bryce Harper. Quote, you never want to get suspended or anything like that, but sometimes you just have to go and get him. You can't hesitate. You either go to first base or go after him. I decided to go after him. Apparently he was very calm while saying this. This is the quote from Strickland. Yeah, I can see how that kind of stands in people's minds, but that's the pass, he said, referring to the home runs from 2014. I'd left the ball over the plate a couple times to him, and he's taken advantage of that, so obviously I'd rather miss in than over the plate. So we'll get to the rest of this first, but obviously, before we continue, I just want to say no one on the Cut Forecast condones violence in any way. No fighting. But I will say, personally, I include, as part of that, hitting people with pitches intentionally. I think it is not something that you should do. That doesn't defend Bryce Harper going to start a fight, but I think that Hunter Strickland throwing at somebody intentionally, and any pitcher throwing at somebody intentionally, is dangerous and is something that is that should be frowned upon and is bad. Do you guys agree with me?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, throwing a very hard baseball at someone at very high speeds is just as violent, if not more so, than charging the mound. So, I mean, I wish the whole thing hadn't happened. You know, I mean, yeah. Bryce could have de-escalated it by simply going to first. I wish Hunter Strickland hadn't thrown at him in the first place. You know.
Yeah, it's certainly shocking to see. I appreciate Bryce being pretty honest about everything here in his quote. I think that, you know, him just sort of saying, like, you know what, sometimes you're gonna get suspended. I have to do this. Like, I think that there's something kind of frank about that, which I appreciate. Even though he shouldn't have done it, and definitely the fisticuffs were rather theatrical. Gemma, what is your opinion on throwing at somebody intentionally?
No, I think I've said it on this podcast. I've said it on other podcasts. I've said it a million times that I just don't think that it's something that should happen at all, ever. It is violence, and no matter what you think you may be doing, you really have the possibility to injure someone very seriously, and that's not cool. I don't think it should be part of the game. I think it should be blasted out of the unwritten rules. So,
yeah.
I strongly agree.
I also think, like, it's clear that, you know, and we need to say, Strickland says that he was not thinking about the home runs. But I think that it's clear to say that he has a beef with Bryce Harper of some kind. And that was part of the motivation here. And I think the league, in issuing the discipline, clearly, like, believes that as well. And so to me it seems like let things go. Especially like if you're a pitcher and you give up a home run, like, it happens, man. Like, I don't know.
Batters get struck out, you know. Pitchers give up home runs. It's part of the game. I think I speak for all of us when I say that I echo Buster Posey's reaction.
Yes.
To the entire
despite the fact that he's named Buster, he is an adult and was the person just kind of like standing back, like, oh, all right, I guess it's happening. But he didn't get involved, which I think is the right thing to do.
There are a lot of hot takes about this. Yeah. I think that just above all else, not getting involved in the fray, I think, is the right move. He was quoted as well, so that we're not putting words in his mouth. This is his quote. There's some big guys tumbling around on the ground. You see Mike Morse. He's about as big as they come. He was getting knocked around like a pinball. It's a little dangerous to get in there sometimes. I think that's very fair.
Yes.
Especially considering he's had concussions before.
And people have gotten injured in base brawls. Like, that's not worth it. It's just not worth
it. Also, plus one for the use of base brawls in casual conversation.
Yes. You're welcome.
And I think Posey is sort of like the leader of the team. Yeah. And I think that there is, you know, I'm sure other members of the Giants would take issue with that characterization, but I think that he is, at least for as a observer of the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, there is something to be said for him not being involved in the fight in terms of just leadership and being able to continue on the next day. And, you know, if these two teams were to meet in October, like, that matters too, that he sort of is like the voice of, like, look, I didn't get into the fight. You guys shouldn't get into a fight either. I think that's important.
Yeah.
As we've discussed, the only good mound charge is Eric Thames' fake mound charge.
Yes. Yes, that is 100%
true. And that 80-year-old man at Rocky's Fantasy Camp, Lou. That was good, too.
Oh, I had forgotten about Lou.
Never forget about Lou.
Okay. Yeah. Now that we've had our serious conversation about this, can we talk about Bryce's hair during the charge? Because I do think we need to talk about that.
There were layers that I didn't even know existed to that hair. It was impressive.
If you're not familiar, which I don't know why you would be, unless you're like a creepily obsessive Cut 4 fan, Chris Landers has the best hair of anyone on the Cut 4
staff. It's
true. Staff,
this
including
is, this
Gemma.
Is
not including Gemma.
Highly debatable.
That's not including Gemma. That's actually very rude.
There are many balding individuals on the Cut 4 staff. I'm not going to name names. They know who they are.
We're sub-podcasting.
My hair is basically like if you took a ball of lint from the corner of the room and put it on a person's head. That is what mine is like. Chris is, it's perfectly coiffed, and so he understands exactly what's going on.
Yes.
In Bryce's,
I will not presume to understand having hair anywhere near as good as Bryce Harper does.
You're as close as we're gonna get. So what is your thought on the Bryce mane? Do you think that this fight well accentuated what his hair does well?
Oh, absolutely. You think about how many times, like, how often do we get a slow motion shot of Bryce Harper slowly turning his head in one direction?
I know.
It was majestic.
And then it's replayed on TV 1,000 times a day.
I know. I mean, he used to have that home run celebration where someone took his helmet off and he
took
his hair back.
I think they still do that. They just don't show it as much on TV.
Yeah, and I miss it. I wish they would show it more often. And this was kind of like a replacement for that.
Well, have you seen his hair gloriously? He's been wearing like a dance headband recently. I'm sure it's not called that, but I had those.
One of those little thin little headbands.
It was like thin rubber band headbands that I used to have when I was younger and I did gymnastics.
Like the US women's national team make out of the
Yeah, it looks like that. Yeah, except for it's like, when I was a kid, they just came in a big package, and whenever I would go to gymnastics, that's what we would put on, like big rubber bands for your entire head. And he has those now, and he's been wearing them under his helmet, I've been noticing, when he takes it off.
Let the hair flow, Grace.
But I think we should congratulate him, because I don't know if you remember, when he debuted, his hair was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, just straight terrible. And it has really become a thing of great beauty. So,
we don't know how much of
that
could be the wife. Could have helped.
Yeah,
as well.
Over the past couple years, it's really improved. I think right now it's like peak Bryce Harper hair.
It is. It has volume, it has shape.
I never want to see anyone fight, but I am, even that helmet throw it's a discussion, but it was worth it for the hair.
I will say I look forward to like 30 years from now looking back on a photo of Bryce Harper and being like, that is so 2010s. Look at his hair. Look at the uniforms.
Yes.
Yeah, that's I look quite forward to that. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on here and talk about the Chicago Cubs, because we can't not talk about them. We're not talking about David Ross. He is not involved in this conversation. But you know who is involved in this conversation is another man from the 70s. That's a joke. That's a joke, David. Please don't hurt me.
That's good. He'll like that joke.
Anchorman Ron Burgundy, because the Cubs road trip was themed to Anchorman. This was this past Thursday. They took off for the West Coast, and they all wore very 70s-style outfits. This is the Joe Madden quote. It's the Ron Burgundy / Brick Tamland. I also wanted to include Tommy La Stella in the tribute. 60% of the time, it works every time. It's sponsored by Sex Panther. This was kind of an all-over quote. A lot of things going on.
Rolls off the tongue.
Joe Madden was very excited about all of this. Here, Anthony Rizzo said, "We'll have to contact Will Ferrell. I saw him a couple weeks ago in Boston." Humble brag. "Maybe he'll come and say hello while we're in LA." And then Kyle Schwarber, unsurprisingly, "Champ's my guy."
Of course.
It's on brand.
And then Will Ferrell actually recorded a message for the Cubs as Ron Burgundy. How great was that?
It was fantastic.
Where does this rank in the pantheon of Cubs-themed road trips? Is this, like, number one? Is it top five? Is it Inner Circle Hall of Fame?
I would argue that it's the only one that I would put it below is the I think it was the Minimalist Zany Suit road trip, that they called it. That was, if I'm not mistaken, the first or one of the first.
Yeah.
And it was just so unbelievably bizarre that I think that has to take the top spot.
I think that the best one was the onesie pajamas one.
That was weird.
Because, I mean, you can't plan it, but it happened to be on the night of an Arrieta no-hitter. So all those pictures.
Oh, they were back on the field with
the
onesies.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So there was this whole other event going on, and that just happened that they were like, well, we also were just going to wear onesies.
Just
going to
have a summer party on the field.
Do we think that, like, imagine if you're Evan Longoria, and you're sitting in Tampa Bay in your lovely home, and you watch the Cubs on these road trips. Are you sad? Is it like looking at an ex's happy picture? Like,
I bet to some degree he's kind of sad.
Is there like
because like
FOMO?
Zobrist is there now, and he's like, oh, my friend, but. Also, I bet he's like, I'm kind of glad the clubhouse doesn't smell like weird old 70s colognes anymore.
That's the thing. You also have to wonder, like, is there a certain point where it's like, I have to go buy another costume for one of these road trips? Like, oh my God.
I'm kind of looking forward to, since it's obviously just stuff that Joe Madden likes, right? Like, things that he personally is into. Like, the Office road trip is probably coming up kind of soon.
That'd be good.
Yeah. You know?
But there was a quote from Jason Hayward that implied that they have meetings about this. And if so, I need to be in one of those meetings. Just because I have to know how this stuff gets decided.
I picture them at like a boardroom style environment. Like
one of those big charts and has like a line pointing up inexplicably.
And they're all wearing their uniforms and they're all sitting there. And like, if this is deep in the heart of Wrigley Field, and Theo is there and he looks very concerned. That's in my head. That's how this is.
It's basically Moneyball in your head, I think.
Yeah. But with road trip uniforms.
But with road trip uniforms.
What is the marketing
efficiency?
There's like
efficiency a lot of, there's like the Matrix with the raining like letters and numbers. Like
this is getting really complex.
That's my image.
What's going to be the next themed road trip?
Hey, how about this? If you were the manager of the Cubs, what would you make the theme of the next road trip?
Well, they generally base it off of the city that they're going to. Like, mm-hmm. Miami was Miami Vice, and San Diego was Anchorman.
Mm-hmm.
I like desperately want to see like what they would do for cowboy get up. So like,
that's interesting.
If they're taking a swing to Arlington or Houston,
mm-hmm.
I want to see like I want to see John Lackey go full Texas.
That's good.
I just want to see what that looks like.
Well, I mean, that's just his life, right?
That's true. He had a Champ Kind look with the big cowboy hat.
Like, he just had looked that, like, right? John Lackey. He just like had that hat and that suit.
He showed up and they were like, "Oh, good costume." He goes,
"Yeah, costume for sure.
Lucky for me.
This is my costume." Yes. I don't know what I think would be a good one.
Dinosaurs. For when they next time they go to Colorado.
Oh, for Dinger. To make Dinger feel less alone as being the only dinosaur left on Earth.
I mean, they made Dinger the mascot because Colorado does have a lot of fossils.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be fun. And plus, everyone, I don't know if you guys saw this video that was going around on Twitter for a while, but it's this professor who brought her son to class because the child had spring break, and he wore a T-Rex costume, and it was super cute.
Aww.
And like, I'm just imagining how great that would be if all the cubs were dressed as weird dinosaurs as well.
And educational.
Yes. No. I take it all back. Pokemon. You know why? Because Addison Russell would kill it. And
that
I need to
true.
Know that.
He would deal out Pokemon cards, and that's who you'd have to dress up
as.
Yes. We do know
that. Yes. I said the word cute, and it's all unspooled in my mind.
You went off. I think you need to be the Cubs manager. We'll elevate Joe. We'll make him the president of managerial operations.
I'll just be like his shadowy aide.
Oh, like a creepy like fixer. Like,
always hanging around in the background. No one knows who you are or where you came from.
No one really knows what you do either. There are a lot of like mysterious quotes and axioms
about
you.
Your business card is just
your
name.
Yep, yeah. That's perfect. I'm in.
Okay. Let's move on from the Cubs theme. I guess I should say why I think the theme should be of a road trip.
Yeah, what would it be?
Kilts. When they go to Atlanta to play the Braves.
What?
I'm
like,
sorry.
Braveheart.
Is a terrible, terrible stretch, and I hate it.
I think that needs a little bit more workshopping.
So nice.
I don't like having you here, because then you team up with her against me.
Look, I was trying to be a mediating influence. You're the one who came up with Braveheart.
Hey, you know what? Let's move on.
I can't believe you didn't pick something breakfast-themed. I'm really disappointed in you.
What breakfast? Like, diner chefs?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Where would that be? I guess you could do Atlanta as well, because they have all the Waffle House.
Yeah.
That'd be... Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on. I don't know if you've noticed this, but the MLB ball persons this year, that is the individuals tasked with receiving the foul balls that are hit into foul territory and then tossing them charmingly to young fans in the crowd, have been on their game this year. There has been a lot of really great plays. Recently, I think last night, we're recording this on Wednesday, there was in the Padres 6-2 win over the Cubs, a Padres ball girl made this incredible catch on a one hop foul ball, nearly saving a young man's life. I don't think that's melodramatic. Although that made it sound like she didn't
his
save
face.
Him.
His face certainly thought he had saved
it. Did make it seem
he
like he didn't make
face.
It.
If you know the emoji, the emoji where the mouth is agape, uh-huh. That is what this young man looked like. And she made a really brilliant play. And then there was a Dodgers ball girl who first whiffed on a ball early on in the game and when it ricocheted off the wall, but then later she made another great catch. Do you guys, have you noticed an increase in the quality of MLB ball persons? I don't know. It seems like there are more great ball person plays this year. I don't know, ball person. I don't know if they have a professional term that they like to be called.
Yeah, this is a discussion we were having earlier.
Yeah.
Is ball people an accepted plural?
It seems like they are people of balls. Like, it seems like the baseball people. Like Mr. Met.
Again, gotta keep working on that one.
I don't know. I just, it seems
back to the original question.
Do you think that all ball people are related to Mr. Met and
Kind of, that's what it sounds like, right? It's a little bit, it sounds like we're trying to come up with a term for Mr. Met and Homer and Mr. Red and all these people. Because, like, ball people, that's what it sounds like. So I don't know.
Is that what? Wait, this is a whole tangent now.
We're already in it. We can.
Are they not just? So they're just baseballs. They're not just baseballs that are like sentient baseballs.
I mean, they have bodies.
You think they are people of baseball? Like, how do you think they?
It's not like Mr. Met is just rolling around at Citi Field.
That
he
would be
walks
kind of
around,
amazing.
He waves.
Yeah,
his wife.
Some team needs to come up with a baseball mascot that's just a baseball.
That just rolls.
Right, but like yeah. They're ball people. That's sort of what they
I
are.
I guess they are.
This could explain the strife between Mr. and Mrs. Met.
What does that mean?
We could have cracked the case.
She is not happy that he's a ball person.
I'm just saying.
This is gone totally off the rails. We're talking not about mascots shaped like baseballs. We are talking instead about the individuals tasked with catching foul balls.
Yes.
We'll call them ball people for the purposes of this conversation. Mm-hmm. I think as a baseball society, we need to come up with a better title for them. But for now, ball people. Do you guys think that they are better this year than usual or no?
I think they're slightly better, but I will say that my time at Cut 4 has given me many things, but one of the things it's given me is a much greater appreciation for that job. Mm-hmm. Because as like in my time just watching baseball as a fan, I had never really paid much mind to ball people. They were just kind of, you know, part of the background ambiance of the game. But now that I've started writing about them more, there are some like truly remarkable feats of athleticism, and it's like a terrifying job if you think about it. Like you're a layperson just given a glove and tasked with defending an entire section of fans from an onslaught of major league foul balls. If you mess up, you're in front of tens of thousands of people and many more on television.
You're essentially like a defensive player playing a shift.
Yeah,
that is your job.
But with little prior baseball training. You're just given a glove and a helmet and saying, get him.
I wonder about that.
I'm sure
is there a ball person academy?
I mean, I'm sure that these people are athletes, lives.
Yeah.
You know, like these young women, I imagine that they play baseball or softball, probably to some degree.
Yeah.
Then there's I don't know if you guys go to a lot of games at Citi Field. Well, you don't because you don't live here anymore, but Dakota. And if you ever sit close enough to kind of like, if you go down there, you like walk around during BP or whatever, the ball people at Citi are adults. Like much more adult than any of us. I just wonder, you know, they probably have played for a really long time. I have a lot of questions.
It depends. I know some of them, it rotates by the game. Mm-hmm. And then some of them, it's like a 65-year-old man who's done it for 20
That's
years.
City. That's yeah. City. That's so, what's happening at City.
I don't know. I think it varies. I also think, the quality of the ball person varies greatly. But I do think there has been a trend over the past couple of years of them getting better.
Yeah,
definitely.
Full dives.
It's a hard job.
It's so hard.
I think there was one in Tampa recently where a kid whiffed on it, and the Rays gave him a hard time. They were like, and they were, joking around. And it's like, they're joking, and it's funny. But, if that were me, they wouldn't need to say anything. I would be mortified the entire time.
Yeah, I would just quit. I would just go home and cry for 10 years.
I know.
Yeah,
it's just more power to all of these individuals.
I know, they're really good.
They are really good. But before we move on, we want to take a second to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. I listen to this podcast. It is better than this podcast. I don't know why you're listening to this. Just, you know what? Stop this podcast and go listen to the StatCast podcast. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers, two super nice guys who also know an obscene amount about baseball. And last week, they discussed a new change in the calculation of catch probability and broke down Yasiel Puig's full-speed Jock Peterson crushing robbery of Yadier Molina from every possible StatCast angle. And I know the calculation of catch probability sounds super wonky. It is not because Mike and Matt are both super down to earth and they're able to explain all this stuff very clearly. If that's something that you want to hear about, which you should, you can download the show on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast by searching for StatCast Podcast or by going to statcastpodcast.com. That's just type in StatCast Podcast and click subscribe. Okay, let's talk about the Dodgers and a certain individual by the name of Kenley Jansen, who is he's been denied a lot of saves recently. I think he only has one in the month of May, which is sad because he's a great closer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, oh, he only has one save. Oh, he must not be having a good season. No, that's not the problem. The problem is that the rest of the Dodgers are too good, and they're never in save situations. And so I think Tuesday night, the Dodgers scored too many runs.
Oh, what a hardship.
I know.
Let us all pity the Dodgers.
We all pity the Dodgers. And so they pulled their team out of a save situation due to two runs in the ninth inning. And so they felt bad. So Yasiel Puig got the rest of the team together. And they bought candy for Kenley Jansen. And they filled his locker with candy. And he was happy. And Puig was your friend. And it was all just a wonderful, happy time in the city of Los Angeles. Are you guys charmed by this heartwarming story of friendship and candy and baseball?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I would like to somewhat question their choice of candy in that there were Twizzlers prominently placed.
Are you at Red Vines?
No, I'm mostly just neither.
Oh.
What is this take?
No, they actually are kind of bad.
What?
Yeah, thank you.
What's wrong
not
with the
Not to take us on another tangent. Also Tootsie Roll Pops in that locker. It was a nightmare.
What do you not like about Tootsie Roll Pops?
They're impossible to eat.
Thank
Why
you.
Would you ever
Think
want
of
that?
The
it's like
Dakota.
So
Think
time
the
consuming.
All you have to do
is get an owl
to
bite it for you.
And then it's one,
Did you sit
two,
in front of the TV looking
good.
At the owl, counting the licks it took you to get it?
Those are the best ads of all time.
And then you waited for the owl.
The owl will tell me. He knows.
Tootsie Roll Pops are great. I don't know what's wrong. As are Twizzlers.
No,
I don't
like Twizzlers.
The
no.
They're too chewy.
I do not want to be the person who reigns on this really spectacular
yes.
parade.
You
because
are. You
I love
are. It's too
Yasiel
Puig.
I love Kenley Jansen. I love the Dodgers as a team. I think they're really fun. I am like fully in support of players expressing themselves via treats. I think it's great.
Yes, I thought this was really cute.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm all for it. I didn't mean for my primary take to be that the Dodgers have terrible opinions about candy.
I'm over
However,
the, no. I'm over the Kenley Jansen thing now. I want to hear about your bad candy opinions.
I mean, by
if
far,
you were if you were buying Kenley Jansen candy to apologize for being too good at baseball, what would you buy him?
I would get him a tub of Skittles.
Just okay. That does seem to be the official candy of sports.
Skittles
That's true.
Are good.
The Rays or the A's use it as
the
their,
A's
their
use
rally
it.
Candy
Dwight
earlier.
Howard was a big Skittles guy.
That's true, yeah.
Marshawn Lynch,
yeah.
famously
big Skittles
big
guy.
Skittles guy.
Yeah.
Gemma, what candy would you buy?
An assortment, definitely, but I would probably go Reese's peanut butter cups because everybody except me likes those, and a bunch of like little mini chocolates. Like Crackle and Mr. Goodbar and Hershey.
Yeah. I will say
and
Crackles
then,
are a very underrated candy.
And bar. Then probably something like Sour Patch Kids or something.
Yeah, that's good. You got a balance of fruity and chocolatey. Well,
okay, but my real question, what is the best candy? Because you don't like
I don't,
peanut
well,
butter.
Yes, which should
so,
be noted
that
I don't like peanut butter. So.
Gemma from planet whatever doesn't like peanut butter.
It's gross.
What is your favorite
candy?
So
what's your favorite candy?
Junior Mints.
Oh,
wow.
God.
I have never heard that in my life.
Are you 95
That's amazing.
Years
I,
old?
I almost respect the sheer temperature of that opinion.
Oh.
That's amazing.
Junior Mints
I can see that from space.
Are my favorite, and then Milky Ways.
Milky Ways
again,
are good.
Milky Ways. The Junior Mints.
Junior
thing.
Mints.
They're great.
What is wrong
They're
with
really
you?
Good.
Did you just like sit in a corner eating peppermint patties by
How
yourself
you,
as a child?
I love peppermint patties.
How do you make it to work every day without just having hordes of people come to you being like, what is wrong with you?
You don't know that doesn't happen. You've never seen me on my commute.
Just randomly shamed by
That's
commuter.
True.
You're like,
know.
Oh, were the subways messed up? Is that why you're late? No, it's because I had to explain to 14 people, you know, at my subway stop why I was eating Junior Mints at 8 a.m.
Gemma's Twitter account is @GemmaConnecto. Please tweet
please,
at her
tweet
about
her
how wrong she is.
I feel like some people are gonna agree with me, and also yes, in my heart I am 95 years old. I like to drink scotch, I like to eat Junior Mints, I even like
Werther's,
and
I
do not carry them, but if someone offers that one to me, I will take it.
Gemma carries a bag of hard candies around.
And I like to read about American history in my spare time.
If you go up to Gemma on the street
and I'm
you're
a baseball
like,
fan, I'm 95 and
whoa.
that was over the line.
My God.
We were just having a nice conversation here.
Unbelievable. Okay, let's move on. Because this has gone totally off the rails. I just want to leave it on this note, which is that Kit Kats are the best.
Oh, Kit Kats are really
acceptable
good. I put him in the top
acceptable
five.
Opinion.
Okay, let us move on because we have Chris here. Mm-hmm. Chris authored a piece that really set the internet ablaze. And it is, of course, the piece about the weirdest endings in Major League Baseball history. You can go read that at MLB.com/cut4. And I guess my first question to the two of you is, what do you think is the weirdest ending in baseball history? Chris, you're the expert, so why don't you go first?
I think there are objectively weirder endings, but the one while I was writing this that impacted me the most, the one that I found the most tragic, was the Don Money story.
Yeah.
For those of you who are unfamiliar, Don Money played for the Brewers for a long time in the 70s. The Brewers were playing at home against the Yankees. It was the bottom of the ninth. The Brewers trailed by three. Don Money came up with the bases loaded.
And that is his real name.
Yeah. First of all, his actual name is Don Money. That's not made up. but it was a situation that every kid dreams about in the backyard. Bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded, you're down by three. And he actually hit a grand slam. He did the thing that we all dreamed of doing. And as he rounded first base, he heard that the umpire had actually called time before the pitch was thrown. And he later flew out to right field and the Brewers lost the game. That might not be, like, objectively the weirdest. There are some pretty weird ones out there, but that is the one that has stuck with me the most.
It's definitely the saddest.
That's so sad.
It's just so, like, what are the odds? I know. Like, man, on the very pitch. I can't get over that.
I feel like that's the kind of thing you would hear in the beginning of, like, a business seminar. Yeah. Like a TED Talk. They'd be like, here's the story of Don Money. Nobody knows about it.
Well, you know, if Theo Epstein had been managing that team or been involved, it would have been in his Yale commencement speech.
Are you referring to the greatest leader in the world, Theo Epstein? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about.
Gemma, what do you think is the weirdest
thing
to an MLB
I have
game?
Opinions about this, but they're not strong. What I really am here for is for you guys to talk about a specific ending that you have a lot of feelings about, Dakota.
Okay. Oh, well, I told myself I wouldn't get into this. But
we're not going to go into this
too
hard.
You're not going to go into it too hard? Okay. What is the point of having this discussion?
My choice is on this post at MLB.com/cut4 is the game three of the 2013 World Series between the Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals. Game three, I don't know if you remember, it ended in a Cardinals victory when there was a strange sequence of events that led
to
Boston Red Sox third baseman Will Middlebrooks being charged with obstruction and Alan Craig being given home plate in order to score the winning run.
Now, you would think that since Dakota's Boston Red Sox won that World Series,
he would have
forgotten about this, or at least let it go.
No, I will never let this go. Because, now, I want to be very clear up front. This was the correct by-the-book decision, okay? I've made that clear. My opinion on that is clear, that as according to the MLB rulebooks, as according to Joe Torre in the post-game press conference, as Jim Joyce, I think, was the umpire who actually called the obstruction on the play, one of the best umpires in Major League Baseball, all of these people, yes, correct, by the book decision. But the rule is stupid. This is my opinion, is that Will Middlebrooks, lying splayed out on the ground, accidentally trips the base runner and he's called for obstruction, even though he is not lying in the line between third base and home plate. It's ridiculous. It is a ridiculous call. And the baseball gods are on my side because the very next game featured Colton Wong getting picked off first base to end the game, and the Red Sox won that game. So I'm right, and God says I'm right.
What, I want
One,
everyone to
not
know
how the baseball gods work.
Yes, it is.
Two, if you just watch the video, it's very clear that when Craig, who was advancing to third on the play, gets up, the straight line between Alan Craig and home plate is right through the splayed out body of Will Middlebrooks.
No, only if he decides weirdly to retreat towards second base.
Only if he decides weirdly to run in a straight line?
It's not a straight line, it's a curved line. If the straight line is him running straight to home plate, he had the path. We're not going to go into this.
Listeners, do you see what I have to deal with?
Chris and I have probably argued about this more than any other topic, which if you know us, is surprising, but this is the thing that is the biggest dividing line between the two of us.
Listeners,
I don't think we'll ever see common ground here.
I would like you to know that our Cut4Cast studio now looks like an insane serial killer hunter's apartment with just like lines of yarn everywhere. Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
All I'm saying is the baseball gods interfered and the
Dakota
Red Sox
has
won.
Like ancient aliens hair right now. He's so worked up about this.
Explain to me Colton Wong getting picked off in the very next game. You can't do it without a reference to the baseball
entirely,
gods.
Okay.
It's not possible. It is not possible. Gemma.
Yes.
free us from this conversation.
No, I engineered this. I wanted to have this conversation because I was so interested.
Anything to take the heat off your
No, I was more, yes.
At any rate, you spoke to MLB.com beat reporter Jamal Collier.
Yes, I did.
Well, let's take a listen to that.
So the Cut 4 cast is joined today by honorary Cut 4 member and, of course, Nationals beat writer Jamal Collier. Hi, Jamal.
I didn't know I had gained status as honorary Cut 4 member. I didn't apply for it. Did I get like a membership card or something?
Well, I guess, yeah, we'll send you a membership card because you have now been on the Cut 4 cast twice, which is the most of any guest. So, you know, that's not a lot, but we got to start somewhere. So,
hey, I'll take it.
You're obviously welcome to come by whenever. But first, most important question is earlier in the podcast, Dakota wanted to know if you like your last name pronounced super French or with an R.
You know, I get this more than you would think, where sometimes people will just not even ask. They'll just go ahead and pronounce it Collier. And I'm just like, hey, man, go for it. If you think... You think Jamal Collier is you know, what I look like a Jamal Collier, I'll take it. But it's technically Collier. I'm sure somewhere along the lines it was a Collier, but
you know, you're
you know, and I want to sound fancy and bougie.
Yeah, you're Stephen Colbert, but Collier, that's you. Okay, so you're in San Francisco now, which sounds great. You know, it's always beautiful on the West Coast. So that means that you were there for all of the action on Monday night.
Yeah.
I mean,
all the action is a good way to put it.
There's a lot going on there. Everybody kind of has their feelings and opinions about it. But most importantly, the most important thing that we obviously touched here on Cut 4 is, you know, however we feel about fights on the field, which is we wish they would not happen. Never good to see people putting themselves in harm's way for something that's kind of silly. But we did get Bryce's helmet throw and then majestic hair situation going on. So what was it like in the clubhouse after that? Like, what were people feeling and doing? It was just such a strange incident all over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a lot of hair between Bryce. There was Michael Morris. There was just a lot of Jeff Samardzija's hair. There was a lot of hair colliding on the field for a fight. I mean, it was strange. I mean, that was the biggest thing. You know, that game had kind of played out somewhat innocently. You know, innocently, not even somewhat, just through the first, you know, 7 innings or so, and then even the first 2 outs of that inning. You know, kind of when first Bryce got hit, I remember kind of looking and Bryce is obviously pointing and shouting there and thinking like, oh man, he's pretty upset about getting hit, and just thinking, okay, he just doesn't want to get hit by this pitch. And then all of a sudden things start escalating and I'm like, whoa, wait, how do we get here? You know, not even kind of thinking about obviously this thing happening between these guys from 2014. And that was the biggest kind of standout or takeaway from the clubhouse, is that the Nationals were just baffled that this thing that stemming from 3 years ago would still be kind of holding a grudge over it. And especially, you know, a series that they kind of continually pointed out, the series the Giants won, and then, of course, won the World Series. And then you're still mad about this. Bryce said, this isn't even relevant anymore. Go home and look at your World Series ring if you're still mad about this. So it was just an odd occurrence. And I think, you know, nobody kind of was really ready or expecting or thinking about this. It also just because I kind of had figured that Strickland and Harper had faced each other at some point, and this would have been settled, you know, between the last couple of seasons. So, I mean, it just was a weird unfolding of events for me, because I just was caught completely off guard and not ready for it to happen at all. Kind of the rest of the Giants and the Nets seemed to be the same, but it just caught everybody by surprise.
Yeah, it did seem like you said, you know, we would have thought they would have faced each other before this, and this thing that happened 3 years ago is definitely on no one's mind except for maybe one specific person's mind.
Yeah, imagine Hunter Strickland, by the way, just thinking the last, you know, 2014 playoffs, then we have the off season, then you have a whole season, then you have an off season, then you have a whole season, and thinking, you know what? Just if I get a chance, I got something for him.
This is very Game of Thrones. Like, he's really just holding on to that.
Right.
Well, like you said, a lot of, you know, a lot of hair flying around on the field, et cetera. I think that for a lot of people, you know, people really enjoyed the photos of Bryce that came out after the fight, the stills of the moment, because they just look very dramatic. And that's kind of the sense that we get. But you said it's kind of just baffling for players on the field. What do you get the sense of when people have to clear the benches? What do they feel their responsibilities are in that situation?
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I was asking a couple of the guys, too, is that what's your strategy? What's your game plan there? You know, because, again, you're not really ready for this, or nothing kind of boiled up to it. Just kind of sudden. I think, you know, there was no other punches thrown really besides between Harper and Strickland. And I think that was the biggest thing, is that everybody really was kind of caught off guard. And, one, they're in there to obviously protect their respective guy, whether it be Bryce or Strickland, and make sure that that guy is not, you know, getting piled on or getting hit necessarily, and trying to separate those two. And you know, especially for the national side, they were saying, hey, we're trying to get Bryce out of there. And you know, obviously you saw Zimmerman, and Zimmerman obviously with that great photo. That was my favorite photo of the whole thing, of him holding Bryce in a prom-like pose by the dugout. But, I mean, it was get Bryce out of there and make sure he's safe and healthy. And obviously, you can go into how much importance he had to this team and how important he is for the franchise. But I think that was kind of the biggest thing for most of those guys, was to separate those two and make sure that their star player was okay.
Yeah, that seems like just a situation that's very stressful to be in. Because nobody, Buster Posey was saying after, he didn't really get into it. I mean, he's not trying to get hurt getting into a fray like that, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, now to talk about a different Nationals pitching situation, one that is perhaps a little bit more fun to discuss. Everyone's getting struck out, just piling them up. Nationals pitching staff is just like, can anyone even get a hit against them anymore? Is it possible? Is it 31 combined strikeouts over two games?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's their bread and butter. And I mean, they built their kind of team on pitching. And when you have guys like, Strasburg and Scherzer, I think like that's at the height of their powers and the best, you know, they could be, that's what these guys can do. And they just miss bats. And it's so weird. They're both power pitchers, you know, kind of by the traditional norm, and is they miss bats and they throw hard, and they throw 95 and plus or whatever, but they're also just kind of different in the way they attack you. And I mean, that it just seems really unfair that those two pitchers can go to you back to back, especially, you know, no offense to the Padres, but the team who's struggling anyway at hitting, and the Padres get those two back to back, they say, geez, couldn't we have at least gotten a, you know, a Joe Ross, Jacob Turner or something here, a spot start from somebody. I mean, that's just, you know, somebody's got to step in there and make it a fair fight.
Oh, wow. Those are some words. So
hey, we're not pulling any punches here.
Yeah, that's not what you guys do. So let's talk a little bit about the rest of the Nationals rotation. You said that their pitching team is their bread and butter. I think a lot of people are looking towards these young Nationals pitchers or guys who are in and out of AAA this year. Do you think we're going to see any changes? What can we expect from guys like Joe Ross?
You know, I mean, if all things would go great for them, would go right for the Nationals, they want Joe Ross to be the number five starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who they think is going to be a big part of the rotation for the future, and for this team right now. I think that they have sent him down to the minors for a little bit a couple of weeks ago, and they kind of wanted him to get some of his arm problems, arm slot problems corrected, not just for this season, but really for the future. And it's the kind of thing that'll, one, keep him healthy, keep him productive, and, you know, make sure he's a strong pitcher for them for the next, you know, 5 or so years that they have control for him. So I think that was the kind of bigger picture thinking for this. You know, again, they're going to give Joe Ross every chance here to secure this spot and to make it his, because the rest of the guys have their rotations spots pretty on lock between Gio, Tanner to go along with the two big guys at the top. So I think that, you know, they would love to just have it be Joe and not worry about it.
Mm.
But, you know, he had the really good start against San Diego, I believe, and then or against Seattle, I should say. And then he had the two he had a start that wasn't so good just on Sunday against San Diego. So, you know, he's still a little bit of a work in progress and still something to figure out there. But, you know, all things considered, they'd love it to be Joe to kind of figure things out and be a big piece of this rotation.
Right. I mean, we talked earlier, early in this year during spring training, you were telling us about how your predictions kind of for the year. And I feel like so far you're pretty on about how the Nationals are doing this year. Do you feel confident?
I have no idea what I said, but good.
Well, you did predict they were going to win the World Series, so that's still out there. But you did predict.
I do remember that.
You said they'd be in first. They're in first place. Is there anything that you did not expect to happen this season that you've seen happen?
Oh, man, Ryan Zimmerman. That was the one that I was completely wrong about. Obviously, a lot's been made about what his exit velocity was and what, you know, how he was hitting the ball hard but kind of nothing to show for it. And I thought that those things, obviously, yes, were true. I thought that if you can get this guy to be back to just a league average player or something around that, around that number, that production, you know, where he's not hurting you and he at times can get hot and be productive. But for the most part, he's just a fine player. I thought that they should take that and run. Mm-hmm. He's been that and more. I mean, he's this is a guy who deserves to be an all-star right now, who's been is going to be the comeback player of the year and probably in a runway. I mean, it's just amazing the fact that he is, obviously he slowed down a little bit from that just torrid April where he won player of the month. But, he's putting up some of the best and most productive numbers of his career. And this kind of reminds people that, okay, he's only 32 years old and that he still has that capability and that production to be, when he's hot and when he's going like that, to be a guy who can carry and carry your offense, hit in the middle of the order. And it's just something that I just did not see coming at all. So, I'll take credit for being right on everything else. But this one here, I had no idea what I was doing. It's just been a complete turnaround for him.
Well, that's good. I mean, you want to be surprised a little bit by some things that happen in your season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you could just write all your articles and go sleep for, 3 months.
Exactly. You think everything's all nice and going boringly, and then all of a sudden Bryce Harper's charging the mound and throwing his helmet.
All right. We got to talk about that helmet throw for a second since you brought it up.
Okay.
He missed on purpose, right? He threw it to the side on purpose. I think this. I'm truthering this now.
That was my initial take, that I think that somewhere along he was thinking, I'm going to throw this, and thinking, okay, that'd be bad. And, just kind of said, let me get this out of my hand and let's start throwing hands. I think, at this point he would say, hey, look, I just saw red and was just going out to the mound and kind of ready to get going. I think, perhaps that he, if he could have it over and then get a better grip on that helmet, that he probably would have thrown it at Strickland. And we wouldn't be talking about a 3-game suspension that it just got reduced to. We'd probably be talking about a little bit longer, to say the least. So, I think it must be incredibly hard to throw a helmet. I've never attempted it, so I could see how it would slip. I think that, like I said, it's the case of just anger. And then not everybody, but I've definitely had anger where I'm just very, not that I went to throw a helmet at somebody, but where whatever's just in my hand, whatever, I can't even process making a proper throw or whatever, and I just kind of just chuck it somewhere. So I don't know. I can't get into Bryson's head, but I think that it was definitely fun for all of us.
Well, I think that you need to test this theory out. I think that someone just needs to tell you some really dumb take, and then you need to throw a helmet. Just borrow one.
You know what? And that is actually – I'm surprised I have not thrown – maybe because I love my iPhone so much. But sometimes scrolling through Twitter and just seeing some of the takes, the scorching takes, it makes me want to –
Yeah, if I had an arm like Bryce's and I could throw on target every time I read a bad tweet, my phone would be stuck in the side of a building somewhere on 7th Avenue.
Yeah.
It would be awful.
I don't know if you're a How I Met Your Mother fan.
Not really.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, well, for the people who are, I'm going to tell the story anyway. But
yes,
the people who are, there's a scene during the wedding in the last season, which is mostly not great, but the wedding where Lily keeps getting angry, and she has a glass of whatever her drink is on the rocks. She keeps squeezing the drink and breaking the glass all over her hands, which is weird. But anyway, let's go with it. Basically, that would be it. That would be us. If we threw our phone every time we saw a take, it'd just be constant. And so basically, after she breaks the glass, then there's a waiter who she's instructed, anytime you see this glass empty or gone, just fill my hand with another one. So she'll break it, she'll get mad, and then somebody will immediately kind of refill her hand. So that'd be us.
We all need this in our lives. We all need someone. Yes.
Yeah, that trash takes.
To follow us around to immediately replace our batting helmets and our phones.
It'd be great.
It would be so good. Well, I'm going to expect you to give the batting helmet anger throw a try. But we were talking about all-stars earlier. Ryan Zimmerman, definitely an all-star candidate, really strong, serious candidate. Who else on the Nats should we be voting for? Who do you want to stump for?
Well, certainly Bryce. I mean, not just because of name recognition and everything there, but I mean, he's obviously having a really great season as well. I've been really kind of championing Anthony Rendon lately. He's in the one of the toughest positions, probably across baseball, because third base just in general is stacked. But National League third baseman, you know, when you look at guys like Arenado and Chris Bryant, it's going to be tough for him to ever break through and necessarily get into the conversation as far as best third baseman. But I mean, he does a really good job on defense, and he's been really hot lately hitting as well. So I think he's a guy who you know, Gold Glove awards are what they are, but he's a guy who probably should get more consideration for those kind of things. But when you have those two names ahead of him, it's just going to be tough for him to ever break in and get All-Star voting or anything like that. So I've been kind of pushing for Anthony Rendon as well. But I think, you know, Daniel Murphy's obviously is also leading the vote in second base. He definitely deserves it, and kind of just continuing everything that he's done over the last year and a half or 2 years now. That he just is this hitter was going to hit 330 and just be a really productive member of the lineup. So then that's going to have a good number of All-Stars. You can obviously vote for pitchers, but you got guys like Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer also have a good season. So I think, you know, Bryce, Zim, and Murphy are the obvious ones. I would probably give some Rendon love as well, but that should be well represented down there in Miami.
Yeah, that seems like they really will be. I mean, I'm ready. I'm ready for Scherzer to be on this All-Star team. It's very necessary.
Yeah. And Max, some guys, you know, All-Star games, they're just kind of, I don't say they're nonchalant about it or whatever. Max loves the All-Star game and loves going and loves getting into the game. I mean, last year he got only one inning and was able to kind of just dial up his arm for a little bit and you know, nearly touch 100 miles an hour, which he was really excited about. And I like that. I like guys who enjoy playing in this game because it's one of my favorites too.
Yeah, that's really fun. Do we have any home run derby guys from the Nats? Any possibles?
I wonder, would Zimmerman do it?
I mean, I know they're probably waiting until it's in D.C.
That's a tough thing, right? Yeah. It's in D.C. next year, and they'll want to do it. I mean, Bryce has always said that he'll do it then. Mm-hmm. So he's probably out. I would doubt Murphy would do it, but maybe. And then kind of test out all those launch angle theories in real time for everybody. But I think, you know, Zim would be an interesting case. Would he consider it or be wanted for it? Based off the tear I saw from him in April, I think he'd be a fun candidate to watch to go out there and try to hit the balls out of the park.
It's going to be hard for anyone to try to get up against Giancarlo in Miami, though.
Well, true. Yeah. True. That might make more guys say, yeah, you know, I'm good. I'll pay. Wait till next year.
Well, that'll be really exciting, though, when the All-Star game comes to D.C. next year. Okay, so before we let you go, now you have things to do. You have phones to throw and angry tweets to tweet. So last question before you go off into your amazing San Francisco day. So you made a lot of predictions at the beginning of the season and you were surprised by some. Do you have any predictions that you want to make now for the next month or so of the season? I mean, obviously you're pretty good at these predictions. You seem to be getting things right. So everyone's been really enjoying Rendon. I mean, we didn't even really talk about that very much. You talked about how people need to pay attention to him more, but like he's really just been on a tear. I mean, having these like 6-for-6, 3-for-3 nights, like, that's amazing.
Yeah, right. We're at 10 RBI nights. It's kind of routine. You know, I think the one guy who is struggling a little bit is Trey Turner. Mm-hmm. And I think he was hitting somewhere around 240-ish or so at the time of recording this. And I think that he was a guy I was a big champion behind. And say that what we saw last year in that 70-some game sample, that was real. And, you know, was he going to hit exactly that? No, because then he'd be Mike Trout, which rest in peace. But, you know, I think so sad that Mike Trout is out, by the way, for a little bit here, two months or so.
Yeah.
I think Trey Turner's in for a big turnaround here, whether it be, we still got some time before the first half is over, but, whether it be a big second half or a big push for the All-Star break, I still think when you look at the final numbers for Trey Turner, you're going to see a really productive and really good player. And I don't think that he is what he's shown so far. I think the league has definitely made adjustments to him. And I think that it's just, you know, he's going to start adjusting back. And has already shown signs of it not being able to necessarily sustain it just yet. But, I think that Trey Turner's in for a big turnaround. So if there's one guy to kind of pick here for the rest of the way going forward, I think Trey Turner's in for a major upswing.
Well, you heard it here folks. Trey Turner gonna be in for a monster second half from our oracle of baseball, Jamal Collier. Yeah, I wore.
I
put on
to touch the orb when I make my predictions. Yeah,
you have to wear a beret and touch the orb when you make your predictions. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Cup Forecast, breaking down fights, nationals, predictions, etc. It was all really fun. Come back all the time, as you are an honorary member of Cup
Forecast. I can't wait to become the first three-time guest on the Cup Forecast.
You're going to be like our Alec Baldwin, like most times hosted SNL. All right. Well, I'll let you go, and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks to Jamal for coming on the Cup Forecast. As always, he is always welcome to come on the Cup Forecast.
All the time.
I know. Next time he's in New York, he needs to actually come on the Cup Forecast.
That would be so nice.
I know. We need to make that happen. It is now time to condense our podcast into 140 characters. One bite-sized chunk that accurately and adequately provides a summary to anyone who has not listened to the Cup Forecast as to what it is this episode of the Cup Forecast is about. Chris, because you are wrong about obstruction.
That's how Eateries was up to any room I enter.
Of the 2013 World Series. Give us your tweet first.
Oh, boy. I'm tempted to just recite the obstruction rule in 140 characters or less, but since I can't do that, let's see. Twizzlers or no Twizzlers, the Dodgers need to free Kenley Jansen and also highlight the exploits of their ball people.
That's good.
Hashtag whammy. Hashtag.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That was good. That was actually really
admittedly
good.
that was a C+ effort.
No, I thought
I
that
panicked.
Was good. That was better than most of
us. That was definitely better than most of the tweets we've ever made up on this podcast. So.
Gemma, give us your tweet.
The only baseball fight I'm here for is the one between Dakota Garner and Chris Landers about 2013 obstruction call. I will watch while eating Junior Mints with Kenley Jansen.
I'm assuming I'm Bryce in this tweet because of the hair, which I'll accept.
Whatever. Here's my tweet. Obviously, comma, if you pause the video at 1:42, you will see very clearly that Will Middlebrooks is lying outside ... 1/244 ; hashtag Cup Forecast.
Ban tweet threads.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that you leaned into that. That's the most important thing.
Just be true to yourself.
I mean, who knows? Maybe later today I will actually write that tweet thread. If you have a tweet that more accurately and adequately condenses our podcast into one bite-sized chunk, or if you have an insane conspiracy theory about baseball that you would like
Please.
To thread and mention us in it, we are at Cut4. Include the hashtag Cut4cast. We'll retweet the best ones. We'll read good ones on the top of the show. You can also subscribe to this podcast. It is on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can go type in Cut Forecast, click subscribe. While you're there, you can leave a rating, 1 to 5 stars. You can write a review. Please do that. It helps other people find the show. If you like the content that we talked about on this podcast episode, we have all kinds of content that is similar at mlb.com/cut4. We have articles, we have photos, we have all kinds of cool videos. Go there and the baseball world will be your oyster. And if you go to facebook.com/cut4, all of that great content will appear into your newsfeed. And you just get to passively enjoy it in your life. You can follow us on Twitter at Cut4, or actively enjoy it if you choose to. Or you can follow us on Cut4 at Cut4. And it's a lot of fun to watch baseball that way. Gemma, thank you as always for being here.
Of course.
Christopher Marcellus Landers.
Yeah, wow, good recall.
Thank you for joining us all the way from Austin.
It's a pleasure to fight with you in person this time.
I know, it was really great.
Warms my heart.
Mine too. But mostly, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.